and welcome to Romaniacs. I'm Roth Taylor, and I frankly got no idea whether Labour is backing a second referendum, but enough of that for now. This week we have an all-women Romaniacs, and as Ian Dunt was WhatsApping me last night, it's well past time. With me in the studio is one of our regulars, actor, writer and Romaniac, Ingrid Oliver. Ingrid, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. This is going to be like the first 5 minutes of Bodyguard. It's just too many bloody women.
You had a go at engaging with the Brexit Secretary Dominic Raab on Twitter this week. Did that work?
This is a tricky one because basically I tweeted at Dominic Raab because it's sort of I follow a couple of people on Twitter. One of them is Our Future, Our Choice, and For Future's Sake, which are both youth groups who sort of are trying to fight Brexit, I suppose, or ask for a second referendum. And Dominic Raab had blocked them. And now you have to be careful how much you believe in Twitter and how much people are actually on Twitter, especially MPs. And Dominic Raab may well not be on Twitter. But the fact is that either he or somebody who works for him decided to block these two groups, which is incredibly worrying, I think. And especially when you look at the people who he does follow on his Twitter feed, and I've got actually a list of people. I've come prepared. People like, the arch-Brexiteers, it's David Davis and Andrew Leadsom, Priti Patel, Rees-Mogg and Johnson. Those are the majority of the voices that he listens to on Twitter, in inverted commas. So it's not that I'm saying that that's the only people he's listening to, but it does worry me. And no, he didn't respond, so.
He needs to get out of his filter bubble, doesn't he?
Basically. I mean, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And our special guest this week is Rupa Hook, MP for Ealing Central and Acton. A very warm welcome to Romaniacs.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Pleasure. You've been in Liverpool at the Labour conference this week. You squeezed in talks about air pollution, Europe, hacking, the Rohingya crisis, universities. Quite a lot, really. What was the highlight?
I did a good breakfast meeting because I think in it's concertina time in those conferences kind of thing, like you squish in a lot sort of thing. Mm. And it was with FEPS, they're called Fédération Européenne, can't remember the rest of it. But they're the sort of European version of the Fabian Society, those sort of intellectual think tanky people. Mm. And there were other MEPs on the panel. I was the voice of Westminster. There were a couple of MEPs and some sort of professory people. In fact, and that was sort of quite interesting.
Bloody experts, eh?
Had enough of them. Yeah. So what else was a highlight? Actually, I had a selfie with Hugh Grant. Is that really tragic to say that was a...
Oh, no, that's definitely...
I said you were great in Paddington. So,
yeah. He's been great basically recently, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, fantastic. We're going to be doing our best to tease out Labour's stance on a second referendum. We'll also be taking apart the Brexiteers' latest trade wheeze. Jacob Rees-Mogg called it supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Yeah, that's supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. He actually called it that. Need I say more? And an EU commissioner has had a go at the British press, taking exception to The Sun's Dirty Rats headline last week. Personally, I've always thought of Michel Barnier as a very, very canny fox rather than a rat. Rupa, how would you describe Donald Tusk?
He's got a bit of a sense of humour, hasn't he?
That
cake and cherries Instagram thing. And he's with down with the kids if he's on Instagram, because I sure... I'm not. And there was a picture of him eating an ice cream. Did you see that one?
Yeah, he looked really sad.
Ferocious.
Yeah, really.
Was that his favourite flavour? Run out or something?
He has a strange expression.
Fuming with the cone, yeah.
All that and more after these quick reminders from Ingrid.
We've got more Romaniacs live news, and this time it's not in London. Hooray! We're taking the live show to the Stroud Book Festival on Wednesday, the 7th of November. Stroud voted 55% Remain in the referendum, so we think we'll be among friends. That could have gone up, obviously, in the meantime. Ian and Roz, plus regulars Droyninsky and Alex Andreu, will be live and querulous at the Lansdowne Hall, Stroud, from 7 p.m. with the usual high-quality Brexit talk, low-quality Brexit jokes and audience questions. So come and see us in the birthplace of the great novelist Laurie Lee for some cider with Romaniacs on Wednesday, the 7th of November. Tickets are available from the stroudbookfestival.org.uk and they're going fast. And don't forget, if you want to get every episode of Romaniacs a day early, then why not support us on patreon.com? And if you back us on this splendid crowdfunding platform, you get each show as soon as it's ready, plus exciting merchandise. I think there's a mug and a t-shirt and a bag. Flag, an exclusive weekly column from the panel and early bird access to our live shows. Search Patreon Romaniacs to find out more.
I'm very excited about Stroud because people have been tweeting me saying, you're going to love Stroud so much. You're going to want to stay forever, which is, yeah, it's very, very good. Now, about this second referendum everyone's been talking about, Keir Starmer, the shadow Brexit secretary, got a standing ovation at the Labour Party conference on Tuesday after he said nobody is ruling out Remain as an option. Can we have a cheer there? Just, you know.
Woohoo!
Hooray! That came as a bit of a surprise after shadow Chancellor John McDonnell seemed to explicitly rule out Remain as an option. He said if there was a special second referendum, it should be a choice between no deal and whatever deal Theresa May manages to secure, which is arguably no choice at all. And Emily Thornberry, the shadow Foreign Secretary, sidestepped the referendum issue altogether by saying Labour would ask for an Article 50 extension and negotiate a better deal, assuming, of course, they're in power. Then, if you're still with us, Rebecca Long-Bailey said if there's a general election, a second referendum won't be in the manifesto, which seems like a slapdown for Starmer. Rupert, what was the mood in Liverpool this week? Do you think things are turning in the right direction?
I do, and I think things are turning in the country as well, actually. There was a very big poll first week of August by Best for Britain with a 10,000 sample size. I mean, I don't usually believe polls, and if I did, the last two would have predicted my demise, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But as a social scientist, usually these things, I think they ask about 1,000 people, but this was 10K, so big sample size. And I think they went for all the 650 parliamentary constituencies in the country, and they reckon that 100 people would shift. I mean, within the Labour Party itself, I think we emerged from this conference very united. There was a vote yesterday night, it was unanimous. So, I mean, yeah, there was a bit of shilly-shallying in the run-up to it, twists and turns and that kind of thing. But I think, and even the Corbyn conference speech today was very strong. So, I mean, I represent a very Remain seat. It's over 70%, 70 point something. My rounding process makes that sort of 71 or 2. But, I mean, even people who voted Leave there in the summer have been saying, cool, we didn't know all this before, did we? You know, even when you go and change your holiday money, that kind of thing. And then all these warnings from Jaguar Land Rover, Panasonic, all these companies that are moving jobs and sort of warning about the supply chain. You know, things like something like the aviation sector. If you get on a plane on the 30th of March, there's no guarantee who is going to regulate the airspace, or even if that plane takes off as it stands at the moment. If we have no deal, that remains, because no deal has no regulation or anything, no transition period. So, I mean, all this stuff is coming out now. Other companies that are moving their European HQs, Panasonic, from this country. There are EU agencies, the Medicines Agency, the Banking Agency that are going. And, you know, people were promised sunlit uplands, all these delightful scenarios, and now we're hearing that, you know, we may have troops on the streets distributing medicines and food, which by then I don't know what it's going to be, potatoes or something, because we're not going to get food from abroad, which we've never had anyway. Even part of the war strategy was to bomb ships coming in, bringing produce. So, I mean, I think in order to make any decision, you should be armed with the full facts. And in 2016, we weren't. I mean, nobody was ever talking about what a customs union was. The Irish border question didn't arise at all. We were promised this would be very easy. It'd be a doddle, a cinch, a piece of cake, easiest trade deals in history. We have got not a single trade deal. And I think there's 170 something days to go. The clock is ticking. There's nothing there. I think it's quite sensible to say pause and reflect. Do you want whatever deal comes out of it? Or do you want to remain? Because we know what that looks like.
Yeah. Ingrid, is Keir Starmer just standing up for the membership? Because 86% of them, I think, back a referendum. But he seems a lone voice in the party at the moment.
Well, this is interesting because he is the only person that is specifically saying Remain will stay on the ballot and seems to be endorsing it, rather than sort of the fudging that we're seeing from other people in the Labour Party.
On the front bench.
On the front bench, yeah. Who sort of saying, well, we're not going to rule anything out. And you know, because Jeremy Corbyn has, so they've all, everyone said that they want Labour to be a more democratic party, so from ground up, and they'll listen to the party. And the party, I mean, the members are overwhelmingly coming out in support of a second referendum with Remain on the ballot. And Keir Starmer is the only person, as I could tell from the conference, from watching the main speeches of the front benches, that is actively saying that. And it strikes me, it worries me, because John McDonnell said something in his speech, and it struck me suddenly as like, if there was a second referendum, I'm not 100% convinced that Labour would put Remain on the ballot, because John McDonnell said the greater the mess we inherit from a Tory Brexit, the more radical we have to be, the greater the need for change, the greater the opportunity we have to create that change. So to my mind, it actually serves the current Labour leadership if there's an absolute mess and a fallout from a hard Brexit. And that could be me being very cynical.
And I think part of the reason where Theresa May went wrong is she's got so many of these red lines and things that she's excluded, and that's why she's in a pickle. And her Chequers deal is unacceptable to the EU, because she said she doesn't want a customs union, doesn't want the single market, whereas we're saying we want a customs union, if not the customs union, and we want to be closely aligned. And I think our position has got better. I mean, I actually found myself bizarrely at the Lib Dem conference as well this year, slightly by accident, because I was asked to do a Women for a Second Vote, what was it? I don't know, something Women Against Brexit meeting in Brighton. And at the time, I thought, I don't have any canvassing that day, it might be a nice day out to the seaside. So I agreed to do it. And then in the week, in the run-up to it, a Lib Dem MP said, you do realise you're coming to our conference, don't you? And at the time, I hadn't sort of put two and two together. However, I mean, there they were just all slagging us off. But we campaigned for Remain in the first place. We then said there should be a transition period. Lots of stuff that we've, you know, that's now commonly accepted. I think we are shifting, but, you know, maybe some people impatient, not far enough and not fast enough. The thing is, we're not in charge. They are. And I think there is a tendency, some of my colleagues who were there between 92 and 97 say that it's reminiscent of that, when they just sort of kept screwing up and were self-inflicting all these wounds on themselves. And then in the end, in 97, it became inevitable. So I think maybe there is half a tendency to just let them sort of screw up. But at the same time, I think it's wise not to rule out stuff, because that's where she went wrong. Do you know what I mean?
Of course.
Start being too prescriptive too early on.
No, and I totally, and I understand, because actually I was thinking about this. If Jeremy Corbyn wasn't the leader of the opposition, maybe if we had somebody who was more openly Remain, say someone like Ed Miliband, for example, would he have played any differently? And actually, because people have been frustrated with the Labour's or lack of reaction to what's been going with Brexit. And I don't think actually it was a bad play. And I don't think even if someone else was in power, they would have necessarily done anything that different. However, the difference being that this is just my personal opinion, but I don't see a Labour leader who wants to stay in the European Union.
The thing is, the difficulty is that our party voted to trigger Article 50, although I didn't and some other rebellious people didn't. However, we represent the 25 most Remain seats in the country. And Ealing, Central and Acton at 71-point-something%, is not even one of those. There's other even more Remainiac places than that. But we also represent the 25 most Leave seats. And apparently, if you go up north, you know, people there are saying, why hasn't it happened yet? Why have we not left? So I think sort of, I don't know, the analogy I would like to see is the poll tax, because in the end, the mood from the country was so against that she had to drop that, and that was the end of Thatcher sort of thing. So at what point... So we're seeing public opinion is shifting, and even within the Labour Party, people like Sadiq Khan were saying, let's honour the result. But then sort of that's before we knew all that we know now, and it's a different proposal. Actually, I asked the PMQ to Theresa May 2 weeks ago, and it was she didn't like it at all.
It's a great question,
and people kept even John McDonnell was high-fiving me after. Lots of people liked it. It was the Prime Minister and I both have seats near Heathrow, and we both campaigned for years against its damaging effects on the lungs of our constituents. But then when the vote came for the third runway, she shifted. If I can understand her change of heart, because new facts came to light and it was a different proposal to what was on the table last time. Mm-hmm. Can't she just give us all a final say on the final day?
It was sort a very of thing.
And, you know, she was preparing for her Heathrow answer, and then suddenly it was a switcheroo. And so by that same logic, democracy shouldn't be a fixed point frozen in time. And I think Keir Starmer has played a blinder, actually, because we've got to take all these people with us. I mean, the Tories seem to be their idea that everyone's a saboteur or, you know, somehow unpatriotic if they dare to question their strategy at all. They're for the 52%. The Lib Dems have very much aligned their colours to the mast of the 48%. But we've got to be for the 100%. And when that mood comes from the country, I think that's sort of more important than really what our leadership is saying, because we're not driving these negotiations. So I can kind of see why they've done it. And already, you know, our position is softening and changing as we know more about this every day. And I mean, ideally, you know, I think our leadership position is we want a general election. And if we did that, I'd love to have in the manifesto to trigger Article 49, which is to take us back in on the same terms once the negotiations have started. I mean, I think as well the idea to have more time to negotiate, which would need agreement of all the EU 27 there'd be by then. But I think they've said they're not going to do that unless there's some sign of some breakthrough, because at the moment there's nothing. There's zero trade deals. There's nothing, you know, no. What have we had? 27 months of David Davis going to meetings in Brussels. Nothing at all.
There can't be, you know, they're not allowed to even start negotiating them yet, are they? I think to return to your point, Ingrid, about Ed Miliband, I think he would have reluctantly backed a Norway-style deal with customs union membership and single market membership. And I think that would have, taken a lot of the heat out of the anti-Brexit movement in a way, because people would have kind of coalesced and said, oh, all right, okay.
Yeah.
And it's the fact that it's gone down such an extreme path,
the hardest
possible Brexit, pretty much, that has led to, well, it led to Romaniacs itself, but has led to this feeling of terrible intransigence.
Well, I feel like, and we're at a unique time politically in the sense that we've got Theresa May and her cabinet, and we've got Labour led by, you know, Jeremy Corbyn, who's probably one of the most left-wing leaders we've had of Labour for a while, at this unique point in time where we're about to leave the European Union. And, you know, there are advantages on the left and right to have a, you know, there are people pushing for a hard Brexit on the left and the right. And so I think as somebody who's an observer and a bystander, and, you know, it's terrifying only because, Keir Starmer saying the word remain, literally just that. And he wasn't even saying we want to remain or that we're definitely going to have remain as an option. He just said we're not ruling out remain as an option. And the fact that that got a standing ovation, it says to me, it sort of conveyed the relief that people get, oh my God, somebody has dared to say the word,
yeah,
that might still be an option. And it's become so, yeah, polarised on the left and right that you just want the voices of sanity, sort of, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. Another week, another Brexit trade plan. This time it was the turn of the Institute for Economic Affairs, which has come up with a report called Plan A Plus. The big claim was that deregulation, in other words, abandoning EU regulations and standards and getting rid of tariffs and quotas, could boost GDP by up to 7.25% compared to where it would otherwise have been. That's a remarkable claim, and it was torpedoed by Christopher Cook of the BBC, who said it was based on dodgy maths. I recommend you read his takedown because it's strong stuff. He says, for example, the issue here is that when I run this model, it gives bananas results. When he runs it, it gives clear and elegant results, which are all of the right scale. This is curious. Ingrid, I remember hearing John Redwood complaining about EU bureaucracy and a bonfire of the red tape 15 years ago. It's obsessed them for years, and it was a mainstay of Boris Johnson's anti-EU reporting when he was in Brussels. Do you think the ordinary person is bothered by EU bureaucracy? Would they be if they weren't told to be by an anti-EU press?
I mean, that's been my sort of my argument from the very beginning, which is that the idea that EU bureaucracy is in anyone's mind in their day-to-day lives is so ludicrous. But we were told that this was the main problem with the EU, and that and suddenly it became people's main problem, funnily enough. And basically, if we leave, we're going to have sort of two sets of tariffs that we need to introduce, EU tariffs and then UK tariffs. And so there's going to be twice the amount of red tape. And there was some, I think one of the car manufacturers, I think it was Rover or Jaguar, saying just for them alone, there'll be some like 60,000 pieces of new paper.
But it'll be our have to red fill tape. Out. It won't be their red tape. We'll be making it up ourselves.
No, exactly. We're taking red tape back.
Yes.
British red tape.
Yeah.
British red, white and blue tape. So yeah, it's
the fact that that was always cited as a sort of really big reason to not be a part of the EU is quite hysterically funny to me now. That's going to be come back to bite us quite badly on the bum.
Back to Theresa May and her embarrassment in Salzburg. The PM was clearly rattled. She said she'd always treated the EU with respect and wanted the same back. There was a lot of sympathy for her from some of the papers, and The Sun ran a front page calling EU leaders dirty rats. Vera Jourova, I hope I pronounced that right, the EU Justice Commissioner, said headlines like that were sowing hate and division. She said she wanted a European approach to media based on quality and smart regulation, if needed. Ingrid, this is a tough one for me anyway, because The Sun's headline was obnoxious, but is it really the EU's job to get involved in regulating the press? How could it, you know, sensibly do that anyway?
It's funny because that was in retaliation, I think. Was it in retaliation to Tusk to doing that Instagram of...
Sounds reminiscent of Up Yours Delors. I think we've had a famously anti-EU press for a long time and, very right-wing press. It's a... I think Kinnock once said, actually it was about the Evening Standard, it gets the one-legged chicken award for balance. I think the whole of our newspapers are like that as well. And, you know, people like Murdoch, who has all these titles up his sleeve, The Times, The Sun, it's all the same organ grinder behind them all.
And it's that slightly British seaside humour where it's like, oh, the Germans are Nazis. You know, that kind of thing that we always go back to when we're sort of stereotyping nationalities. And I think, I mean, everyone does it, to be honest. The Germans, we all do it. It's humour. It's the lowest common denominator, but you can't regulate against it, I don't think.
But, Rupu, is our tabloid culture uniquely horrible in Britain?
I mean... Page Three as well is pretty degrading. There used to be a campaign in the 80s. I think that's gone away. But, I mean, when you have neutral adverts, sometimes what the public takes away from it... I remember, actually, probably the year I was doing A-level politics, 1989, there was a European election. And it was the first time that the Labour Party won a national contest. So it looked plausible that we might one day win a real election. And the posters that the Tory party put out said, "Don't let Kinnock in by the back door." And the polling found after that quite a lot of people quite liked the idea of Kinnock in by the back door, because that was during the harsh ravages of Thatcherism, when bad stuff was happening in this country. So that is what helped the Labour Party win a majority of seats in that European election. And it's sad that our MEPs who've worked hard for us all these years, they're losing their jobs, basically, in March. I grew up at a time when sort of anything good that ever happened in this country seemed to come by the back door from Europe. And even when I first started going to Labour Party conferences, when Tony Blair was Prime Minister, they have this sort of curtain before the anticlimax of the leader actually being, you know, he walks on the stage, and they would project all these sort of achievements of Blairism, paternity rights, cleaner beaches. And I thought, hang on, all these things came from the EU and he's passing them off as his own. So kind of the question of regulation, it's a worry that the people in charge now, people like Michael Gove saying we could actually, you know, there's a worry here, even who's going to regulate all this stuff, because we're leaving the court system as well. And you do think, what kind of tin pot dictatorship marks its own homework and is judge and jury of its own stuff, kind of thing. And so, it's a worry. Gove and people like that are saying that we can exceed all these standards. We can better them. But, I mean, given the way they've tried to wriggle out of things like pregnancy discrimination directives before, Conservative governments, even, again, probably when I was doing A-level politics, Thatcher wanted to get out of the social chapter. I just don't have any faith in any of these people at all. I mean, they want to deregulate.
Of course,
because they're all employers, you know, the Rees-Moggs, all these sort of people.
And the very fact that report's come from the ERG, of commission report, from the IEA. And the IEA, as we, you know...
They're not unbiased.
It's a right wing.
And, I mean, some of the stuff that comes out of there is extraordinary. They believe in the power of money in the economy and a free market economy. And that is it. And whatever it takes to achieve it, it's all fair game.
One of the big criticisms is that it believes that throwing people out of work will lead to an economic revival. That is very, very disputable. To put it slightly, to put it mildly,
and that's what I mean about the extremes of the right. We have the Rees-Moggs who in some ways it doesn't matter to them if the economy is totally
fucked,
frankly, because that's all the better for deregulating everything, starting from scratch. Because at the moment we've got too many bloody pesky regulations that stop them from doing exactly what they want.
Ingrid, you've started swearing. We're missing you.
I know. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, it's getting all sweary again.
10p in the swear box.
Yeah. No, I was just, yes, I wanted Ian to be here.
No, we're missing him, aren't we?
The spirit of Ian through me. That's weird.
Yes, maybe. I'll try and restrain myself, but it's tempting. For a Brexit media watcher like me, it's been fascinating to see the Daily Mail get slightly less horrible and substantially less Brexity over the past few weeks since the new editor took over, Geordie Grieg from Nigel Dacre. Ingrid, have you noticed this switch? Or do you not read the Daily Mail?
No, I've heard, but I don't read it, so I wouldn't know.
I only read it if I'm on a plane. They seem to always give it free on a plane. Well, so if I'm reading a hard copy, therefore I'm sitting on a plane. But
I always look at the front pages, and it's just like they're not quite as nasty to women, first of all, which is nice.
Good for them.
Yeah. They're just slightly bitchy as opposed to very bitchy. And it's just not as pro-Brexit, so I'm quite cheerful about that.
Is it, when you say it's not as pro-Brexit, is it getting more pro second referendum, or is it sort of just slightly less?
I wouldn't say it was pro second referendum, but it's definitely less up yours and less cheerleading for Brexit.
Right.
I think it's softening people up.
Okay.
I think it basically wants a single market deal. That's my guess.
I'm
really quite excited about that because I don't underestimate the power of the Daily Mail.
No, you should. One shouldn't. This episode of Romaniacs comes to you with the kind support of Honest Brew, the online retail shop for beer lovers and the beer curious. Life is too short not to drink great beer, and these are great times for exciting beers with tons of flavour and masses of character. Honest Brew deliver amazing beers from a selection of over 400 craft brews from around the world right to your door. And they've got a special offer for Romaniacs listeners. You can get free standard shipping on their craft beer introduction case if you go to honestbrew.co.uk/Romaniacs. And this is a brilliant selection of 12 beers from the UK, Ireland, Spain and New Zealand. And it's a great way to discover the style of beer that you will like, from IPA to pale ale to hopped Weissbier and beyond. So go to honestbrew.co.uk/Romaniacs to get free standard shipping on a craft beer introduction case and start drinking great beer, not just good beer. That's honestbrew.co.uk/Romaniacs.
We're delighted to have Rupa Hook on the show this week. Rupa, you've described yourself as a resolute Remainer. Even Vince Cable said that if he lived in Ealing Central Acton, he'd vote for you rather than the Lib Dems. You've talked a bit about your constituency and how Remain it is. I think it's my constituency, Hornsey and Wood Green, is the most Remain-y one in the country, but it's pretty anti-Brexit. When you're out and about in the constituency, what's your feeling as to how things have changed? You mentioned earlier that you're beginning to get a bit more scepticism from Leave voters.
Yeah, I mean, businesses as well, they're noticing that initially, with the falling pound, they were getting more orders from Europe. But then now, when they want to restock or get supplies again, everything's gone up. And the EU staff are leaving as well. So a lot of them have a very international workforce. And they're worried. We know that in the NHS, nurses are leaving in droves. I mean, there's even stuff that says that the care sector... So, I mean, I've had two parents since 2014 who've both deceased, and they both had carers and stuff at the end, and that's an unpleasant job, changing people's incontinence pads and things like that. Sort of British born don't want to do that job, so it's a lot of EU nationals who perform those kind of services, and that sector is hollowing out. And there are reports saying that if I don't know, someone of my age with kids at one end, and I mean, my parents have both passed on, but with aging parents and kids, the sandwich generation, it's women who end up doing those things informally when there are... So, you know, if this carries on, there'll be gaps in the labour market kind of thing. So all that stuff I see when I'm out and about.
Can I, sorry, just to come in on that, I find that so interesting that you say that it's EU nationals who do those jobs that British-born people don't want to do. And
as someone who I have a German father and I grew up in Germany quite a lot, and what I see over there and the difference between what I feel, and this is all anecdotal of course, but the difference I see between people in Germany and people here is that there is a very strong work ethic in terms of from a very early age, people are encouraged to, if they're not academic, that there are other jobs that they can. That it's not all about being academic or being rich. That there are good jobs with a good in a strong economy that need people to be trained to do, or you know, that there's no shame in doing a job like changing someone's incontinence pad, that it's a vital service. And for whatever reason, we don't seem to have that same ethos here. And again, I do wonder if it boils down to that. You know, the constant comparisons. Britain was great and will be great again if we leave. And we just, it's that constant obsession with our dignity and we're the best.
And so two worlds, exactly.
Yeah. Whereas Germany, obviously, for example, you know, they lost two world wars. And so they have to dig down and they have to just get on with it. And they can't go, oh, we were great and we went, look at us. They have to sort of focus on the here and now, which is manufacture and not this sort of weird idea of. And I always say that, because, you know, X Factor, when X Factor became very popular in the UK, that idea that you can get something for nothing, you can be famous with very little effort. And that just doesn't seem to be as much of a concept in places like Germany. It's not as attractive a thing. So, I mean, I'm not to do us people of Britain down, because that's not always the case. But it is interesting that you say that. That there's a sort of a dearth of people wanting to do those jobs.
I mean, there are certain other ones, things like fruit picking. Apparently there's loads of rotten fruit in Kent and elsewhere because there used to be sort of temporary visa schemes where people could come in and out for doing those sort of things. And then EU, Eastern European people would come for a summer and pick fruit, but now they're not coming anymore. So
yeah, and we know actually from the fact the cabinet has basically approved what the Migration Advisory Committee suggested last week, which was that new migrants to the UK, when you're giving out visas and so on, that EU migrants should not have priority, and that basically that only skilled people should have priority. And that, as you say, Rupert, that really is going to be a killer for these sectors. I think they want to make a special exemption for agriculture, but there are plenty of others which they're not planning to make an exemption for, and they're basically saying, well, British people should be doing these jobs, and we think there is a little bit of slack in the labour market. Clearly not a lot, because unemployment is so low at the moment, but we think there is a little bit of slack that will enable people to move into these professions. But as you say, Ingrid, it's going to require a mental switch for that to be an attractive career.
Yes. And what I remember, one of the things that really made me laugh at the time, I mean, it's tragic, so it's not funny, when Tim Martin, you know, the Wetherspoons chief, who was one of the most vocal Brexiteers at the time, and he vigorously campaigned to take us out of the EU, and then wanted an exemption and was sort of applying for an exemption so that he could have European workers in his pubs. It's like, well, do you not understand what you were campaigning for? Because you don't get an exemption. Nobody gets an exemption. If Brexit means Brexit, that's it. You don't get to do that anymore. And the sort of utter stupidity of that, just, yeah, head in hands, constantly head in hands.
I mean, I raised something in, I think, 2015 in the House of Commons, the curry crisis. At the time, there were two Indian restaurants a week closing their doors in the UK because of the Tier 2 visa regime had gone very punitive. So the average salary in this country is 26,000. It used to be that you could pay a curry chef to come over. The surety you'd have to give is that they'd get 18k, which is about apparently what they're paid. But suddenly it went up to 36. It sort of doubled, which is way more than the average one. And so I was asking about this to George Osborne. Remember him? You know, all these people that have buggered off our country and completely left the crime scene. But anyway, and he said something about, gave a pretty non-answer. Actually, weirdly, there is a Not the 9 o'clock News sketch of Rowan Atkinson saying almost exactly what George Osborne said, which was, we all love a good curry. I think Osborne said, we all love a good curry, but surely we should train them to do it here, you know, rather than getting them from the subcontinent. And the Atkinson one is, we all love a good curry, but now we've got the recipe. Do we need any of those brown people here? Anyway, the point is, that argument was then picked up by the Brexiteers in the run-up to 2016, and they were saying, well, when we stop EU migration, these ones from the subcontinent can come with open arms. And there was even a hashtag, Save Our Curry, that Priti Patel, who was the International Development Minister at the time, was putting about. And then after the result, at the time I was briefly a Shadow Home Affairs Minister under Diane Abbott, one of her team. So I asked it to Amber Rudd from the front bench, where are they? When are they coming? When do we get all these curry chefs? And I was told, no, the target was always tens of thousands. So, you know, they told Porkies, people in good faith, there are two curry trade unions, can you believe, in this country. And they bought it, and they were encouraging all their members to vote Leave because they thought that their thing would be lessened.
Told lies? Goodness me.
Broke the law.
Unbelievable.
I mean, this goes on and on.
I mean, sorry, I was just thinking about this yesterday, the lying thing. I know that on the second referendum, I mean, you very much obviously would be, you're in favour of a second referendum, and you would want to see Remain on the...
Yeah, definitely, because we're going to vote against the deal, so how could we have anything else?
Yeah.
We've said this week,
we're
going to vote against her deal, it doesn't satisfy our sixth test. So then you'd have a deal that we didn't want, but it just doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense, but it is a possibility. Would you think... I don't think so.
I think the wording of the thing that was agreed... I think, yes, there was a bit of... I don't know, those conferences there, work hard, play hard, you're going till very late in the night. Maybe it's a lack of sleep, someone did an interview and said slightly the wrong thing. But the text of what was agreed is that nothing should be ruled out.
Ruled out. Do you believe, you know, as someone who... Sorry, I'm now... As someone who, you know, goes into the House of Parliament and in Westminster every day, or every other day, I don't know how often...
I've just been there
in.
Today, and I should be going back
good.
After this.
Very good. You know, what is... How do you feel as a Labour Remainer... What is your...
How are the wounds?
Well, just you know, are you frustrated that you can't talk about anything else? Are you frustrated with people within your own party?
I mean, it has taken up all the bandwidth. So things like we were promised a domestic violence bill. You know, there's loads of other important things. I will be doing an advice surgery tomorrow. The main thing people will come in about is housing. You know, six people living in two rooms, overcrowding, that kind of thing. So there's bread and butter issues that need sorting out, whereas this has just taken over everything. Nobody mentioned it at all on a doorstep in 2015. Although I've only been an MP 3 years because of that ridiculous snap election that she called to get more power and she lost her majority. I've had two of them. First one, no one mentioned it at all. Second one, in a Remain area, the literature coming through, they chose a candidate very late, said, help Theresa May, elect Theresa May's candidate to get a strong hand for Brexit. In a Remain area, people aren't going to want to hear that. They felt insulted. Anyway, the mood in the House of Commons is that we want a general election. I don't think the Conservatives, with their patched-up deal with the DUP, are going to vote for that because turkeys do not vote for Christmas. However, there are people like Anna Soubry. There are certain Tories, actually a lot of strong women, Sarah Wollaston, who's one of these people. She was a doctor, and then when they made open selections, she wasn't a lifelong career Tory sort of thing. Justine Greening, who was Education Secretary, people like that have said, you know, they wouldn't vote to bring down their own party, but they support a second referendum. So, I mean, I think things are shifting and changing, and that would have more chance of parliamentary support than a general election. Although, yeah, I'd dearly love to see the back of them and get rid of them in an election. That'd be even better. But
you've been very critical of Boris Johnson, especially after his infamous burqa column. You've spoken what it's like to be called Paki. Actually, of course, your family's from Bangladesh, I think, and to get racist hate mail. And do you think things have got worse since the referendum?
I think the country is divided. And I think certainly that weekend we saw... So it was June the 23rd, 2016. That very weekend, there was a whole spike in hate crime. And it's sort of, I wouldn't say legitimised it, but it's maybe disinhibited people that maybe were thinking that and wouldn't have done anything. Because you hear all these things about insults, people get it on the bus, that we voted to get rid of you lot, why are you still here? And I think there is this poisonous, toxic attitude. But at the same time, I mean, I do... I don't know. I mean, for a long time, I would do meetings in Ealing and Acton, and that's nice because they're all an audience that are like you. But when you do national media, you know, there, as I said, the dispossessed people in the north, I think those reasons of austerity, why a lot of people wanted to give David Cameron a good kicking. And even that weekend I had emails from people saying I did it, I didn't think it would win. It was an anti-establishment thing. So, I think things are shifting. I mean, I think even in Leave seats, there are MPs that have shifted because now we know the enormity. This is bigger than any single piece of legislation, any budget. It touches every aspect of our lives to disentangle ourselves from 40 plus years of close cooperation, peace, harmony, and all those things.
How does it work? As in, when you have a stance on Brexit, and that, you know, have you got in trouble from the leadership's office, or do you just go, no, I'm going to do what I want to do? Because that hasn't been what you've been advocating has not been the party line.
Yeah, I mean, so the big crunch points we had was the triggering of Article 50. So that was. Oh, that was that first parliament, wasn't it? So that would have been sort of spring 2017. And myself and a load of other... So we were not first-rung shadow cabinet, but the lower orders defied the whip. So we have a whipping system where you are elected on a party label. People expect you to... If you were too maverick and crazy, what was the point of standing on a party label if you're going to defy them every time? That was a three-line whip. I mean, I spoke to our chief whip before and said, I'm going to have to do this because not only is my seat remained, but it's the right thing to do because I actually think it's right. And I was told, OK, I understand. And it wasn't just me. In the end, we got a very sternly worded letter that if this happens again. But I think on that occasion, we had been a Remain party and there were so many of us. And I was the most marginal in... I had the smallest majority in London, second smallest in the country. It was 274 the first time I got elected. It was a Tory seat in my childhood. Sir George Young sent me an 18th birthday card. Dear Rupert, congratulations, you can vote for me forever. Happy birthday. Didn't work. So we managed to snatch that from them in 15. So sort of, again, that was a factor. But I mean, and then this time round, the only thing people talked about was Europe. It was the only thing on the leaflets. And I explicitly said about that I voted against the triggering of Article 50. And it had previously been considered a three-way marginal because there was a Lib Dem presence as well. But if you put the old 274 in a calculator, times it by 50, it comes out at 13,807. Even the 807 we would have killed for the first time, it's sort of four times what it was. So for me, it was helpful. But I'm no longer on the front bench. I'm no longer Diane Abbott's shadow, whatever, Home Affairs Minister, because that's sort of not tenable with... if you're on the front bench, you have to be party line down the line. So that's why, yeah. So sort of, I think there were some other things on customs union stuff I rebelled after. The first one, I think they overlooked in that first parliament because there were so many of us.
Yeah.
And it was such a big fundamental thing.
Rupert Hook, thank you very much. Finally, it's the return of listeners' favourite, Ask Romaniacs. Every now and again, we get you to submit your questions on Twitter, and here's a few from earlier this week. OK, we've all been waiting for this. Rupert, you've been asked to do your impression of Boris Johnson. Do you think you can bring yourself to do it, or is it just too painful?
What I was trying to say at the time was there's Mark 1 Boris and there's Mark 2 Boris. And I didn't realise, actually, I was... describing current affairs and not history. So what I actually said was, the Boris of old, you know, he was like, oh, excuse me, sorry about that, just shagged your wife. Accidentally. And, you know, it's all very well for these people like this to go around quoting Socrates and all these other South American footballers.
Yeah.
But that bluff thing, it was meant to be that, you know, he used to be fairly harmless, but he was socially liberal at the same time. He was mayor of London twice, but now he's turned sinister and right wing, and he's playing to the gallery and blah blah blah. However, yeah, I was cruelly stopped because I was reminded that it was not watershed time. And yeah,
thank you for that.
Thanks. Yeah. And from Ben Capper, have you had any Remain voting constituents get in touch to say how they now want a quick, hard Brexit due to the appalling conduct of Donald Tusk, like seemingly lots of Tory MPs have had this week? A quick, hard Brexit, that's making me feel slightly ill. But anyway, this was after the Mail sketch writer Quentin Letts tweeted that he'd met a vociferous Remainer, lifelong Islington-style Labour, 65-ish, not a Corbynite, who was so angry at the EU's treatment of Theresa May that he now wanted Brexit. And some people mocked Quentin. They said things like, and then we drove off in our imaginary taxi. But I, for one, don't doubt that someone who makes a lot of stuff up about Brexit... Have you met any converts to leave this week?
I mean, to be honest, the main thing people talk about, as I say, who come into my surgery, are they're about to be evicted, they're about to be deported, we need to sort it out. So, I mean, if you watch a programme like Pointless, very few people even know who's running the country, let alone that level of detail about the what the sticking points are with Chequers and the EU. But no, that's not a common experience for me. The thing that he described. I'm a social scientist. I think he needs a larger sample size.
I think you're right. I haven't come across anyone this week either. But yeah. Art McCarrick asks, presumably the Europe bit of the left of vehicle registrations will have to be legally changed post-Brexit. Will it be replaced by anything? Now, I looked this one up and it's a bit contentious. You can actually display the UK flag or another of the UK national flags, like the Welsh Dragon, instead of the EU one on your registration plate if you want to already. But after Brexit, that won't be compulsory. You can just have nothing at all. There was a Brexity petition on the parliamentary website about this in January, and the government was for once very clear about the what would happen after Brexit. There are no plans to make the display of the Union flag on vehicle number plates compulsory. So, whether you could stick on an EU sticker in protest, well, that would certainly piss off any leavers if you did, so that would be entirely up to you, Art McCarrick. And this last one is very hypothetical. If there was a second referendum without an option to remain, what would be the outcome politically rather than legally if everyone who wants to remain spoiled their ballot? What do you reckon, Ingrid? Would you be tempted to do that if the only two options were no deal or Theresa May's deal?
I'd set fire to myself. That would be my protest. But yeah, you'd have to do something. I'd spoil my ballot just to show.
I normally hate the idea of spoiling ballots, but in this case, I think it would be the only option.
What other option would you have? Yeah, exactly.
Because they have to count them. They have to say when the returning officer says X number of ballots have been spoiled. So it does get...
And how amazing if spoiled ballots were the winning majority.
Yeah, I remember when I was in the NUS, there was an option called RON, Reopen Nominations, and one year the Labour students didn't get their paperwork in on time. So there was a campaign to make RON win every category, and it was even allowed to host, and they sang Dadu RON 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 and it romped home.
Which brings us to the end of the show and the traditional clip of a non-English EU language. This is Gabby Hallgrove, who's from Puerto Rico, dual American-British citizen, an unrepentant Europhile Remona and a Democrat voter, with a bit of Puerto Rican Spanish, which sort of counts.
Los que votamos a quedarnos no nos vamos a callar mientras los políticos sigan diciendo y haciendo estupideces. ¡Arriba, Remainiacs!
That means those of us who voted Remain aren't going to shut up while politicians say and do stupid things. Keep it up, Remainiacs. Thank you. Send us your closing clip in a European language. Just record something on your phone and email it with a translation to info@remainiacs.com. We'll use the best ones. And that's the end of the show. Thanks to our special guest, Rupa Hook MP. What are you up to next in the good fight against Brexit?
I think just sort of everything I do is indirectly or directly telling people. I've done an interview this morning with, who I was against, Ian Duncan Smith. And I had to point out that we're both going to vote against the Chequers deal. You know, we had 50 Tories in open revolt in an upstairs committee room the other day. This is an unprecedented time of political disarray on all sides. I'll be hammering that home wherever I can.
And thanks to Ingrid. Any last words for today?
Go women. We did it.
We did it.
Without the boys.
Yeah. We'll see you next time. Here's our theme tune, Demon is a Monster by Corner Shop, and a shout out to our latest Patreon backers. We'll be right back.
show, and thanks from me to Peter Plunkett, Sami Hamroush, John, just John, perhaps John Redwood, who knows, Christian Wren, Harish Hirani, Eva Maria Bonin, Martin Robinson, Michael Forrest, Gavin Hogg, and Matthew Eustace.
And hello from me to Benjamin Wilde, Paul Greaves, Rupert Mitchell, Jesse Smith, and Russell Lemon. Many thanks. We'll see you next week.
Romaniacs was presented by Roz Taylor with Ingrid Oliver. Studio production was by me, Sophie Black. Romaniacs is a Podmasters production.